Hi, Linda. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, Pamela, this is my pleasure. I just adore you and love your work. So thank you so much for having me.
Oh, I'm so excited to have you here. So first question I want to ask you is that most wealth building advice focuses on tactics like save 10% of your salary or invest in the hot stocks, you know, all that story. But you say that something else has to come before tactics. So I wanted to find out what that is.
Well, it is our mindset and the way we think about money and what we believe about money. And the way that that became clear to me was from a young age, I read Think and Grow Rich at 10 years old.
Great book.
And learned about mindset and money from Napoleon Hill. And then when I later went on at 39 to make $2 million by investing, I looked back at what were those steps. And so I could identify what I could teach to other people and help them do it. And what I realized is before you get into those tactics, you need to have some things happening in your mind to allow those other things to happen. Because if you don't think right, you actually probably won't move forward with doing those tactics.
That's really interesting. So you tied it back to that very powerful, very seminal book, Think and Grow Rich. And it sounds like you kind of got some of those concepts in and put them in by osmosis. And then they resulted in the tactics that you executed down the road. So what would be some of those things that you kind of took in terms of your mindset that allowed you to actually do those things?
Well, one thing was I noticed that people made a decision to become wealthy, that they decided this was something they wanted. They didn't leave it up to chance. It wasn't that it just was going to happen. They decided it was what they wanted to happen, and they went after it. Hmm. They also were very positive people. We've heard the term positive thinking and sort of poo-poo it maybe, or sort of just take it for granted, but there really is a power in positive thinking. There really is something different that happens in our mind when we leave out the negativity and we focus on the positive and what's possible. So that I saw was very, very important as well.
Okay, so I want to unpack both of those because they're really important concepts. And let's dive first into decision. What do you think? Because most people say, yeah, well, I would like that. I want to be wealthy. That's a decision. Or is it? So what makes it a decision? Like, what is a decision to be wealthy?
There is a difference between saying, yeah, I want to be wealthy, to I will be wealthy. And making the decision is more definite, and it means that you're going to invite financial things into your life that are, you're going to make it an interest, you're going to make it a hobby, you're going to make it a part of what's going on in your consciousness, and it's not just something that you are going to leave to chance, like, oh yeah, well, if that happens to me, yeah, that'd be great. It's not like that. The people who become wealthy go after wealth. They go after learning about it. They study it. They become very interested in it. One story I like to tell is about John D. Rockefeller. He was a very modest man. He was a clerk. He was an accounting clerk by trade when he was a young man at 18. And he focused on money. He focused on growing his account every day. He focused on how could he get more in his account? How could he make it bigger? And by focusing on it and calculating his net worth every day, that was something that was in his consciousness all the time. And that eventually made him into the wealthiest man in the world in his day. And still, generations later, that family still is one of the wealthiest in the world.
Wow. Well, you know, it's funny. It's interesting that you say that there's a decision between I want to and I will. And if I were to kind of highlight what would be different from a coaching perspective in that, I would say that when you say, I will do something, then all of a sudden your actions become in alignment with that versus I want to. And that's what seems to be a part of the story that you just told about Rockefeller, which is that he checked his net worth every day. That's an action that would be in alignment with I will be wealthy.
Exactly. And I think that's a fabulous summation. Exactly.
Oh, right. So, you know, let's talk about for a moment the term wealth and money, because in some ways it can be feel very scary for people, this idea of wealth. And fear, obviously, is one of those blocks, right? It's one of those kind of mindset things that can hinder us. So what happens if we're afraid of the concept of wealth or money, or if we have these hidden fears? How does that show up, and what could we do to kind of overcome that?
Well, fear is a negative feeling, of course. Mm-hmm. And the problem is when people are in fear, that negativity blocks out positive things that want to try to come in because our mind is on a negative channel. So you can't have fear and love happening at the same time, or fear and gratitude, it is, fear and gratitude happening at the same time. So to get out of fear, one of the best things you can do is be in gratitude and have a gratitude journal, do written exercises about gratitude. But the fear is what keeps people stuck, and it keeps them grounded in negativity. It actually keeps them from hearing things that might be positive in their life. For example, there might be opportunities that are headed their way, but because they're in this negative state and this negative channel, they are not going to respond to those opportunities. Or they might not even hear them. It might not even really register with them that it's a great opportunity. And they might just say, oh, I can't do that for whatever reason. And so the negativity really, it really does hurt people a lot more, but also so does lack of belief in ourselves and not feeling worthy. And this was something that I discovered that women often have trouble with, is not feeling worthy of wealth. That really blew me away. I never heard that when I was in the financial world. I spent over 25 years with investors and never heard anything about that. But when I started doing individual work, I heard quite often that women did not feel worthy of wealth. I think that that may come from fear, but it's still, whether or not it's from fear, I don't know, but it's a negative belief that keeps us, that has the same effect on us as fear does.
Okay, so two layers in this. First, I want to deal with the fear piece, and then I want to go to this self-worth piece. So from a fear perspective, what I hear you saying is that it kind of shuts down the area of possibility. And if we were looking at this from a brain science perspective, that would make sense, right? Because the fear part of our brain, the amygdala, is, you know, that kind of, or I'm sorry, yeah, the amygdala is the part that is gets triggered when we're in fear, and it basically goes into fight or flight mode. Whereas the prefrontal cortex, which is sort of our higher self, we don't have access to that when the amygdala gets triggered. So biologically, what you're talking about is that when we're in fear, we really can't look at it from a higher perspective. I know that's true for me because it's funny. I noticed, actually being an entrepreneur, that when I would get anxious about things, that I would literally forget about opportunities. I would forget that people had, you know, written me to, hey, I want to follow up on this speech. I would forget for a day because I'd be anxious about something. And then I think, how did I forget that somebody reached out to me about this? But you're right.
Exactly. Yeah.
You're right. So that fear, I want to ask you, because really it's what's happening in our brain, that gratitude piece, keeping a gratitude journal. What other things can we do to help turn off that fear so we have access to our higher self again?
Well, it's much simpler than people think it is. And sometimes it's so simple that people don't even believe it. But our mind is so powerful. That's why things like the placebo effect actually happen, because mm-hmm. our beliefs have real power and our mind has real power. So W. Clement Stone, who was a very wealthy man in his day years ago, said, you can affect your subconscious mind by verbal repetition. And that's all it is verbal repetition. But people often will say affirmations, or they'll try affirmations, and one of two things will happen. Either they'll say, oh, affirmations don't work, or they'll have some struggle with them, and they're both part of the same problem. And the problem is this, just like you were saying about our mind and the different parts of our mind, we have an internal struggle where if we say something that we know isn't exactly true yet in our life, mm-hmm. like if someone weren't a millionaire and they said, I'm a millionaire, then our subconscious will actually start an argument with us, and it'll say, no, you're not.
Yeah, I know that. I know that little voice in my head, like, oh, so you think you are, really?
Exactly. And then we get totally off track because we start arguing with ourselves about the fact that the affirmation that we just tried isn't true. So I developed a little technique to counteract that. And that technique is to have a statement that's an affirmation that you want to be true, and then have a statement that already is true. So that by the time your subconscious tries to argue with you, you're already on to the true statement, and it will shut down the argument, and therefore it will accept the not yet true affirmation much easier. So it goes like this. If you're not a millionaire, you could say, I'm a multimillionaire. My name is Pamela. Money flows to me easily and effortlessly. I live in Florida. So you can just every other one say something already true, and it will therefore go into your subconscious much easier, and it will accept those beliefs much easier. And then through just repetition, just simple repetition, you are changing those subconscious beliefs that somehow got into our system and got stuck there probably from our childhood, from our parents telling us things like, you know, money doesn't grow on trees, or you're never going to amount to anything, or whatever negative things mm-hmm. that, you know, come out of parents' mouths with good meaning, but unfortunately land in our subconscious on a permanent basis. But it's that simple to have repetition really to work.
So I would call that the Trojan horse method of affirmations, right? Sort of get those beliefs that are resistant to our mind in the moment, the ones that, you know, we'd be arguing, and couch them in something that seems that's true, so our mind can argue. So let me ask you though about that technique. Do you start with something that's true and then go to something that your mind would typically argue with that you want to create, and then back to true? Or do you start with the thing that your mind's going to argue with first?
You start with true, and then you go, you start with what you want, and then you go to true, and then you go another what you want, and then you go with another true.
Okay. And how many could you do in a row, like, before it starts to be too much?
Well, I think people should have probably 10.
Okay.
I think 10 is a good number.
10 in total.
Well, yeah, so you've got 5 affirmations and then 5 true statements.
Okay.
And that makes it easy enough that it eventually will be committed to memory, which would be great, because the more you can say it, the more you're making that belief happen. So you're actually, by the repetition, what's going on in your brain is you're actually connecting you're actually building new neural pathways.
Right.
And when you are saying that affirmation statement, you're building that neural pathway. That's why it's just simple repetition to keep that going. And eventually that neural pathway has a clear path and becomes something that is a new belief that you really have. So you're going from something you don't believe to something you do believe, and something is happening physiologically in your body when you do that.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then what happens really, I mean, this is so incredibly powerful, as you're building these new neural pathways and you start to memorize it, then it becomes almost muscle memory. Then it moves out of the conscious prefrontal cortex, and it moves into the part of our brains that handle habits that are basically automatic behaviors.
That's right.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
Yep. And I found that millionaires did this, that millionaires used affirmations, that they worked on their beliefs, that they put in their mind what they wanted to believe. It wasn't a natural thing that they just had happen. It was something that they learned from other millionaires, that they did this, that they had this habit, that they repeated these things, these beliefs, so that they could grow bigger, could have more money, have a bigger company, have more opportunities come into their life. They were seeming to be more lucky than someone else. And it was all through the power of thought is really where it all originated.
Love this. So let's take the flip side of this, because we started off talking about the negativity and the fear, and then the worthiness piece. So talk to us about that and how that shows up and what we can do to overcome that.
How to overcome unworthiness?
Well, the feeling of unworthiness. Like, first of all, how do we even notice this happening in our heads? And then what can we do to help that?
Well, the women that have struggled with this that I had spoken to and kept hearing, you know, about this from many different women, it started to be coming from a place of just thinking that a lot of money was somehow either more virtuous, or somebody was more, there was something special about somebody that had more money that they didn't have. There was something that made them put them on a pedestal, that made them feel better than. There was something that made them feel like, oh, I don't think I can have that. I don't think that's possible for me. I don't think I'm good enough for that. And so I would say that would be just a slightly different set of affirmations to overcome some of those beliefs, so that they feel good enough. They feel worthy. They feel like you don't have to be superhuman. People that make a lot of money are not superhuman. They're people just like the rest of us, who probably have a different belief system and who have brought money consciousness into their thoughts on a daily basis, so that they're actually growing their wealth much more frequently than the average person, because they're thinking about it and they made that decision they're going to do it. And so it all comes together and it works for them to eventually end up wealthy.
Okay. So that is definitely an outline for how to shift. And if I were to tie that back to something you'd said earlier, in doing these affirmations that kind of help shift our sense of worthiness as women, if we're saying that this is something that's particular to women, then kind of tying that to the gratitude journal, or even what I would call a success journal, where we start to notice those things that support that new belief, then it creates this virtuous circle almost.
Yes, and people often like to create vision boards, and they'll say, oh, I created this vision board. We've all heard the story about the person in The Secret who created the vision board, put the house on the vision board, and then years later was unpacking some things, some boxes, when he moved into a new home, and then found that vision board, and it was the house that he's living in.
Mm-hmm.
That is something that is another form of affirmation, that is a visual form of affirmation. Mm-hmm. And so what I like to do is have people put them together, to put the words and the pictures together. And I use an app that's a free app. It's called Flipagram, Flipagram. And what Flipagram does is it allows you to put custom audio and pictures together in a little slideshow on your phone. So you can create your own affirmations. You can do it the way I've taught on this call. You can say what's already true, what you want to be true, you know, or start with your affirmation, then what's already true, and next affirmation, what's already true. record that into your Flipagram, and then put pictures of the things that you want that you would put on your vision board, put that in your Flipagram as well, and then you just turn it on and watch it every day, listen to it, and you have something that's going to, by repetition, change your subconscious beliefs.
Oh my God, I love that so much on so many levels. It appeals to me from a coachy mindset level. It appeals to me from a very tactical, practical level, the visual and the audio. And then as my tech geek self, you know, I love that. All right. Yeah, total tech geek. I want a new app, an app I don't know about. Oh my God. Hey, how did I miss that? You know, I have that gift on my website, the, you know, 19 apps to lift your life, but I did not know about Flipagram. It might have to become 20 apps to lift your life. That's fabulous.
It is. It's really addictive, and it's fun to have your own slideshow, but to have it for something that's really advancing your life,
yes,
and not just for a fun slideshow of some pretty pictures, but to really use it as a tool. When I saw it, I thought, oh my gosh, this is perfect to use as a personalized tool for people to forward their life and to create their own vision board, but to also create the affirmations tied to the vision board and to move themselves forward even faster.
Yeah. Yeah, that is all utterly fabulous. And we will definitely put links to that in the show notes for this. So I just want to ask you, what myths do you think we need to let go of that block our ability to build wealth?
Well, as I mentioned, I don't just normally talk about mindset. I do have tactical things.
Mm-hmm.
And the six steps to wealth, they start with creating a wealthy mindset and then saving a nest egg, finding a mentor, investing in a money engine. Step four, step five is compounding at a high rate. And step six is protecting your wealth. Well, in this sort of fad of financial advice right now seems to be this belief that all debt is bad.
Mm.
And nothing could be further from the truth. The truth is that millionaires use something called other people's money all the time to build wealth for themselves. And very, very wealthy billionaires who are hedge fund managers, managers of very high-end investments, are using debt on a regular basis to increase their returns. So the fact that we have this concept that all debt is bad is very worrisome to me, because there's a huge difference between debt at 3.5% that's tax deductible if you itemize when you have a home mortgage, and debt at 20 or 25% on a credit card that's totally from consumer purchases and not for an asset.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that we're thinking in our consciousness now, in our society, that all debt is bad and everyone's racing to pay off their home mortgage, they're racing to pay off any kind of debt they have, I think is a huge mistake. Because if you had, for example, here's how debt increases return. If you paid $100,000 cash for a house, and that house increased by $10,000 in value, that's a 10% return on that house. But if you paid only $10,000 down for that $100,000 house, and that house increased by $10,000, now you have a 100% return, because you're making $10,000 on your $10,000 down payment. So leverage increases our rate of return. And if you follow my steps to wealth, step five is compound at a high rate. If you can compound at 100% a year, you can start with next to nothing and be a millionaire in a little over 7 years.
Mm.
So the compounding rate is everything in wealth building. And if people aren't paying attention to how to compound money, and they aren't, and they're taking their, let's say, for example, you're taking a $300,000 lump sum to pay off the rest of your mortgage, but instead you could invest that $300,000 at an investment that averaged 8% over a 30-year period, which is the average for the stock market, that would grow to over $2 million. In 30 years. So the person who used the $300,000 to pay off their mortgage may never be wealthy in their life, But the person that didn't pay off that 3.5% mortgage that was tax deductible and instead used that $300,000 to become an investor and compound at a higher rate will have a comfortable, lovely retirement, probably still be able to pay off their house later if they wanted to, and really have the life that they want. And that's a huge difference.
Wow. Wow, there's so much in this. I mean, so many different layers in this. And what, if I were to pull out from a coaching perspective, what you're saying is that it's not a black or white kind of thing, that we have to take a very nuanced look at best use of funds, having our dollars work for us instead of we're working for them, right? Because compounding is really just making our dollars work for us at a much higher rate.
Correct.
Yeah. So that, I love this. I mean, I could talk to you forever, and I'm looking at the clock and I'm like, oh my God, we're already at 25 minutes. How did that happen? I know the promise of my podcast is 20 minutes and we're already over. So I have one question that I want to ask you as a takeaway. One other action step that our listeners can do that will have an immediate impact to help them move forward in their wealth building.
So I would give them a quote from Oprah. And she said, create the highest, grandest vision possible for your life because you become what you believe. And I think people don't have a high, grand vision for their life. I think they get really caught up in what they think is practical or what they think might be doable, but they're not really reaching for the highest, grandest vision possible. So I want to encourage them to really reach high.
I love that. That is the perfect close to our first conversation, because you know I am going to have you back.
I'd love to come back anytime.
Thanks so much, Linda.
My pleasure.